We are continuing our journey through the life of Jesus. We have just recently, in recent weeks, we've seen the story of Jesus in Jerusalem for festival season. And of course, John records a lot of those stories. And now we're going to follow Jesus back up into Galilee. And today's story will take place in Matthew and in Mark. And as we often do when we have a story about Jesus that is told in more than one location, we tend to merge them together and make our kind of jump back and forth for our own hybrid reading, because sometimes one story tells a better, we just like the details of one more than the other. And so today we are going to read the story in Matthew and in Mark. If you want to follow along in your seats, in your Bibles, we'll be in Matthew 15 and in Mark chapter 7. But of course, as always, the verses will be on the screen behind me. Let's jump on in. It says, one day, some Pharisees and teachers of religious law arrived from Jerusalem to see Jesus. Now, again, Jesus was in Jerusalem recently, we saw. But now, and he was on their turf and created some waves. Now, they're going to find Jesus up in his ministry area, and they have questions. They're always scrutinizing him because he didn't do it the right way. It didn't fit into their system, and so they had to ask questions. They had to find reasons to condemn him, which they will eventually do, and they are up in his neck of the woods. Verse 2, it says, they noticed that some of Jesus' disciples failed to follow the Jewish ritual of hand washing before eating. Now, in case you're reading that and thinking this is simply a hygiene issue, although that, and I'm all for that, you know, like some wash those hands, they're nasty. But that's not what's going on here. That's not what's happening. This is about something much deeper. This is about rituals. This is a ceremonial thing. It was a Jewish ritual for cleanliness reasons that I'm going to get to more in more detail in a few minutes here. But I want you to notice that they're bothered because they're not ceremonially clean because they didn't follow this ritual of hand washing before eating. In fact, verse 3 explains the Jews, especially the Pharisees, do not eat until they have poured water over their cupped hands as required by their ancient traditions. I want you to notice that phrase, their ancient traditions. Okay? Now, we're going to come back to those traditions, but this tradition included pouring water. They cupped their hands together, pour the water over till the water ran over every inch of their hands and ran down past their wrist. It was very particular. And they had these customs before eating. It goes on in verse 4 to say, similarly, they don't eat anything from the market until they immerse their hands in water. This is but one of many traditions that they have clung to. Notice that word traditions again. That they have clung to. Notice that word clung to. Such as their ceremonial washing of cups and pitchers and kettles. They had certain ceremonies for that too. How they'd wash the cup from the inside out and all these details. I could go a lot deeper into many of these things. From my own past studies and recent brushing up on it, but it's not important. The bottom line is, I want you to understand, they had traditions, and a lot of them were ceremonial. A lot of them had to do with the culture. By the way, there's one funny detail. They believed they had to wash some of these things in running water, which means it could be from a river, a stream, the ocean would count, but it could be rainwater as assembled and dropped, but it can't be from a pool. They had all these different little quirks about how they did this. And a lot of it was tradition. And some of that came from a time in their past when remember, I say this a lot, the Israelites were in slavery sometime before this, 1,500 years earlier, in Egypt. They became strong in slavery. When they came out of slavery, they never governed themselves before, so they were given laws. Moses gave them laws that he said, these are God's laws that he's given me to give to you to follow as a nation. And they had those laws, and they dealt with all sorts of moral issues, civil issues, judicial matters, dietary health, you know, disease control, you name it. But a lot of it was ceremonial stuff. They had built a tabernacle for worshiping Yahweh. They would go out and build a temple eventually. And the priests inside the temple would have policies to wash their hands a certain way and their pots a certain way to be properly cleansed for doing so. And eventually, the temple was destroyed during the Babylonian captivity. And then it was rebuilt and then destroyed and then rebuilt until Herod's temple. But bottom line, in all of that wild ride, while the Jewish people were without a temple or were scattered in captivity, many times they passed those rituals that the priests would follow onto all the people so they would remember these sacred things that meant something to them when they had their place of worship. And they become customs and rituals that they held to. And by the time Jesus showed up, a lot of the religious devout still practiced them. And they were exactly what they were said to be. They were traditions. Now, why do I point that out? Because traditions are usually, you wouldn't call something that is a command of God, you would not call that a tradition. That would be a command of God or a teaching of God. Traditions are oftentimes things that people will make based upon something that God teaches to do or commands to do. They would take it and say, we're going to help us follow God's ways, we're going to create a framework to help us do that. And these practices that we're going to create are to help us follow, they are not the actual command of God, but they're a system that will help us do it better and more faithfully. And then eventually that system or that framework becomes so important that it becomes, the longer it goes on, it becomes a tradition that becomes, in so many cases, bigger than even the original commands of God. And tradition is a buzzword for some people in different backgrounds. Tradition is beautiful. I love tradition. There's holiday traditions, there's family traditions, there's religious traditions. They're great, they have their place. Some people, because of their past, might hate them. Some people might love them. But the bottom line is tradition is a good. But it's not good when something becomes a tradition based upon ideas that would help us do better, and those traditions become our new religion. And yet that's often the case. There are people everywhere who will embrace their traditions with such tenacity that they think are helping them be better Christian or better righteous people. They'll embrace these traditions with such tenacity that they will ostracize others or separate from others or have divisions or be at odds because tradition became an idol. And in this particular story, the religious leaders have these traditions, and these are very important to them, and they're going to confront Jesus about it. In verse 5, so the Pharisees and the teachers of religious law asked him, why don't your disciples follow our age-old tradition? This is something that, this is a tale as old as time. This is a key part of our faith. Don't throw that aside. Our age-old traditions, why don't they follow them? They eat first without performing the hand-washing ceremony. Now, interesting, they don't accuse Jesus of not following the ceremony. It's interesting. I don't know that, you know, it's kind of like the time when the disciples were picking ears of grain on the Sabbath day, and they said, why are your disciples doing that? But they didn't accuse Jesus of doing that. And I think one of the explanations for that is that Jesus was more careful to follow all the little iotas of the law, because remember, he said, I came to fulfill the covenant. You call it a contract. I came to complete that contract. I'm going to complete it. And of course, on the cross, he's going to say it is now finished. And the later Christian writings would say it is now obsolete. And Jesus would give new commandments and new covenants along the way. But Jesus seems to be careful, but he's allowing his disciples to do things that are against these traditions or commands. We're going to get to the commands in a minute. He's allowing other people, like on the people he heals on the Sabbath day, to take up their bed and carry and do certain things that were frowned upon, because he, though he was walking a path, was going to replace it and didn't care that his disciples were following a covenant that no one kept anyhow. That's why the Savior was there. So anyhow, they're like, but your disciples aren't performing the hand-washing ceremony. They're not following our tradition. And they're upset by it. And by the way, that's what happens with tradition, is it becomes a divisive point. Let's go over to Matthew 15 real quick, verse 3. Jesus replied, and why do you, by your traditions, violate the direct commandments of God? Now, Jesus just did his classic, I'm going to answer your question with another question. That's kind of funny. We'll talk about that more a different day, but he does this sometimes. He's like, let me answer your question with this question. Why? And it was a harsh question. Like, why do you violate God's direct commands by your traditions? And they'd be like, wait a minute, no, we don't. We have our traditions to help us better keep the commands of God. Jesus is like, no. You use them as tools to become so important to you that you overlook and actually end up violating the direct commandments of God. Well, I need an example then. And Jesus says, here's an example, verse 4. For instance, For instance, God says, honor your father and mother, and anyone who speaks disrespectfully of father or mother must be put to death. Now, that first part, honor your father and mother, is one of the 10 commandments, one of the top 10, right? Those few commandments that deal with honoring God as the one true God, and then the rest are about how we treat people. Don't kill, don't cheat, don't lie, don't steal, don't dishonor your parents. That's a big one, honor your father and mother. But then most of those commandments are teased out elsewhere in the law of Moses as far as, let me give you more context, or even penalties. And this other part is the penalty that seems pretty harsh to you and me today. Aren't we glad that we don't get put to death for that today? Most of us would be dead today. So we're not. But anyhow, the point is all about honor your father and mother. That's the big idea Jesus is pointing out. And that's the commandment. But he says this in verse number 5. But you say it is all right for people to say to their parents, sorry, I can't help you, for I have vowed to give to God what I would have given to you. Referring to financial help. Let's talk about this. This is a whole thing right here. And I want to rush past it, but I can't, because this is a tradition that I think we would be better off to understand. There was a tradition that they built for their generosity and for their giving and for their dedicating of their money. It was called Corban. Corban was the proper name of what they would call a gift that would be given to them. That this money would be dedicated to the Lord. And you could say to the temple, but that became an obscure term. At one time it was dedicated to go to the temple. And as time went on, that got stripped back to just being to the Lord. It was a dedication that someone could make of their own money, or that someone could give them the money and say, this is Corban. And in a lot of ways, what it became was a way to, at first, make sure that we are being faithful with what God has entrusted with us and being generous. Maybe even as a way to give a portion of our money to the Lord by saying money was given earmarked for that. But over time, it became a series of loopholes. And none of us are strangers to financial loopholes, are we? Forget the temple and stuff. Think about all the loopholes we try to find. How can I earn income that is off the record so it's non-taxable? And how can I find a way to do this and not have to pay that? And how can I be generous? And I've seen people do all sorts of interesting things, like they have money so they start their own charities or 501c3 so that they don't have to pay taxes on some money nor give it to some other organization that they can't control, but they can basically handle their money to their own devices and call it generosity and tax-free. And we're all, people play that game all the time. But in those days, they could give money and say it's dedicated Corban, sorry, the pronunciation right here. Corban is given so that I will say it's dedicated to the Lord, at one time to the temple, but then to the Lord. And therefore, as time went on, they could spend it. They would still use it as they wanted to, oftentimes, by saying, hey, it's for the Lord, and I'm living for the Lord, you know. So therefore, it's for me as I serve the Lord. It became a whole system of ways to have money promised that could be used to my discretion. But then they would say, Mom and Dad, I can't help you because this money is earmarked Corban. The problem was their parents might be in trouble because, you know, and again, the economic culture back then, remember how it was. Women didn't have much of a place in society economically. They were in trouble if they were alone, or if they were divorced or widowed. The widows and orphans were always in trouble. In that culture, parents, if they could build wealth before they got old, they were fine. Otherwise, they took care of their kids when they were young. And if they couldn't build enough wealth on their age, their kids would take care of them because there was no Social Security to supplement their 401k, right? There's no other things to tap into. It was just like what you had is what you had. And so the kids could say, hey, thanks, Pops. Thanks, Mom. But I can't help you because I've this money is Corban. It's a tradition, and it would be inappropriate. And Jesus says, in this way, verse 6, in this way, you say that they don't need to honor their parents. And so you cancel the word of God for the sake of your own tradition. He says, there's your example. There's many more I could give you, but there's one of how God's word is a casualty to the sacredness of the traditions that you think make you better. That's what tradition can often do. By the way, notice in that example, that the tradition canceled a commandment about how they treated their parents. It's interesting, when you get to the Ten Commandments even, after the first few about our honoring God, the rest of them deal with how we treat people. Don't kill them, don't cheat, don't lie, don't, you know, all that stuff. And most of the, you look through the whole teachings of their scriptures, and they all came down to how we respect and honor God, that's our faith, and how we treat others. It's the vertical and the horizontal. And Jesus says, oftentimes God is concerned about certain things, in such as how you treat people, the horizontal, but you have found traditions that you think make you a good religious person, but allow you to mistreat people. And I've been alive long enough to see how tradition works in today's culture. Lots of people can be religious and have traditions, even call themselves Christians with traditions that are based upon not things that God commands, but ways that will help us be closer to honoring the things that God commands. And those traditions become so sacred and so embraced that people will cut off relationships and ostracize others and make all sorts of harm and meanness over traditions, and therefore violate God's command about how we treat people. And that's the next up. But it's what can happen when religion gets out of its right lane and out of its place in our lives. So Jesus says in verse 7, he says, "You hypocrites." Isaiah, that's the prophet Isaiah several hundred years earlier, Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you, for he wrote, "These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me." Notice the word bolded is hearts. We're going to talk about that a little bit here. He says the people are really good at saying the right things. They talk a good game. They put on a good show. They live, they exemplify how holy and righteous and good I am with this outward appearance and outward words and outward impressions. But the hearts are far from me. And then Jesus adds this statement. He says, their worship is a farce. Oof, this is quoting Isaiah. Their worship is a farce, for they teach man-made ideas as commands from God. That's that, so those traditions again. Man-made ideas that were supposed to help us do better become our traditions that are man-made, and these become equal in weight to us as the actual commands of God, and then the commands of God suffer. And he says it's a farce. And here's the funny part of the whole story. Are you ready? This all started with a question that the religious leaders asked Jesus about, why don't your boys wash their hands according to our laws? Jesus is like, really? You're about their hands? Jesus is like, listen, guys, hey, it's not a hand problem. It's a heart problem. It's not what's on your hands I'm concerned about. It's what's in your heart. And no one can see that as quickly, but that's the real issue. And so, Jesus is going to turn away from the religious leaders. The religious leaders are there. He's going to do what he had. They always interrupted him. He'd have to pay attention to them sometimes. But when he could, he'd say, I'm done with that. He turns away from them to address everyone else. He's not teaching a crowd, but there's always people milling around, half eavesdropping and listening, ready for Jesus to talk. And so in verse 10, it says, then Jesus called to the crowd to come and hear. Listen, he said, and try to understand. I love that phrase at the end. I don't know why, it just has tickled me all week long. He's like, try to understand. Like, don't even just, don't listen and understand. He's like, just, can you try? Try to understand. I think God says that to me sometimes. He's like, Arlen, try to understand. And so he's like, guys, gather around, listen, I'm gonna tell you some things you need to hear. Try your best to understand the words that are coming out of my mouth. Okay. And then he says, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. You are defiled by the words that come out of your mouth. And just now, Jesus opened a whole new topic. Besides the part that the words we say are what defiles us, he just said the first part that we want to glance past, and I want to glance past, but we better not. He said, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. Well, hold on. He just said that to everybody, including the religious leaders. That was not their question. Their question was eating with your hands washed and your pots and pans, maybe, is a side reference, ceremonial things. And Jesus just broadened it to say, it's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. And he's talking about, that insinuates a whole lot more than just your hand washing. And this is not Arlen's opinion right here. Everyone who heard what Jesus said heard what you and I don't hear today, because they had not just tradition, they actually had their scriptures. Are you ready for this? They had their actual Law of Moses scriptures, the Bible as we call it today, their scriptures that taught them that certain foods were unclean to eat and certain foods were clean to eat. And certain foods would defile you and certain foods would not. That was the scripture. And Jesus has just gone beyond the question of the Pharisees and said, it's not what you put into your mouth that defiles you. Well, hold on now. That's a pretty big umbrella. You need to specify, you mean with the exception of those things that the law states that you can't eat. But Jesus doesn't say that. He says, is that what goes into your mouth that defiles you? You're defiled by the words that come out of your mouth. That's going to turn a few things up. Jesus was good at that, by the way. Jesus was good at just saying things that just threw everything. Again, he's going to build a whole new covenant, new command. These are the things that got him in trouble. Moses said this, but I say, who do you think you are? Well, I think I'm God. How dare you, sir? I mean, this is the kind of talk. And so here he is saying, it doesn't matter. I'm worried about not what you put in, I'm worried about what comes out of your mouth. Well, verse number 12, then the disciples came to him and asked, do you realize that you offended the Pharisees by what you just said? Like, they're offended. Like, I mean, they were right there and you answered their question in the harshest ways, and then you turned around and like said that to the crowd? I mean, they're offended. Jesus replied, every plant not planted by my heavenly Father will be uprooted, so ignore them. And that's a big statement too. In fact, it reminds me of a parable we saw a few months ago called the parable of the wheat and the weeds. And if you remember that, I could spend some time that I don't have time to spend in those two spaces there. I will say this, by the way, as we go through the life of Jesus, there are just certain stories and interactions that are so signature and big that they speak into our lives in a large way. We have more coming. But if you want to know some of the ones we've already covered, if you missed them, they're worth going back and listening to on our website. One of them is the parable of the wheat and the weeds. It's a big deal. And Jesus basically has just said, my Father didn't plant them. They will be dealt with in time. Your job today, just ignore them. Just ignore them. He said, I do my best, but sometimes I can't because they interrupt me. Then when I start ignoring them because it's not what I'm here. I'm not here to bicker about religious systems. I'm here to save the world. Here's the thing. All of us would do ourselves a huge favor if we would learn to start ignoring some things and maybe sometimes ignoring some people. We get so caught up in all the drama and all the algorithms of socials and all the fights out there, and we got opinions, we got to jump in and spout off and say this. And sometimes our life is better served if we would learn to ignore some things that just get in our craw and keep us from being about what we're supposed to be about. Jesus, ignore them. And then he says this is great. He says, they are blind guides leading the blind. Don't get mad at me for making a chuckle. I laughed when I was reading that earlier. Like, it's blind people. I know it's terrible. But it's just funny to me, picturing a blind person. Like, I need someone to help me see. I'll guide you. Thanks, where are we going? I don't know, I'm blind too. I mean, it says if one blind person guides another, they will both fall. They'll both fall into a ditch. It's terrible, terrible imagery, but remember last Sunday when we were here and Jesus healed the blind man, and then he said, spiritually, I came to open eyes spiritually and to show people who think they can see that they're actually blind. And it was the Pharisees in Jerusalem that said, are you saying we're blind? He's like, basically, yes. Anyhow, he just basically said, these religious leaders, they think they see how things are, but they're so wrong, they don't know how blind they actually are, but they speak as if they can see. People believe them because of the way they talk, and they follow them, and all they're going to end up doing is going into a ditch themselves and leading their followers with them. Just ignore them. Whew. Powerful. Well, the disciples have questions still. They're like, okay, we'll ignore them, but we can't ignore something you said, Jesus. So they have a question for Jesus. And one of the disciples is going to be the one to speak up first, right? Which one do you think is going to speak up first of the disciples? Peter. Guy's always the first one to talk. He's the vocal leader. And so it says in verse 15, then Peter said to Jesus, hey, explain to us the parable that says people aren't defiled by what they eat. Here's the funny part. Jesus didn't tell a parable. He made a statement. But they were so sure that the scriptures say this, then you must be a parable. And we're very interested. Peter's very interested because this is a game changer. And by the way, Jesus didn't use the word what you eat earlier. But everyone in the room got the message. We mean you're not defiled by what you eat, because I have a verse to show you. What do you mean by that, Jesus? Explain that to us. And Jesus does. We're going to go back to Mark chapter 7, okay? Mark 7 to finish up this part of the journey. Mark 7, verse 18. Don't you understand either, Jesus asked? Can't you see that the food you put into your body cannot defile you? Some of us would object to that and say, I've had some food, Arlen, that defiled me. Some food poisoning and a few other things. I'm sure everything my husband eats is pretty defiled I understand what you're saying. But here's the thing. Remember, he's not largely talking about hygiene or health. He's largely talking about ceremonial cleanness. There are laws, a lot of the foods that were forbidden in the Old Testament weren't necessarily unhealthy. Maybe they were for a nomadic people at the time. But a lot of the things that we don't do this, we wash our hands, we wash things we buy in the marketplace because the pagans may have touched it and we want to be holy before God. I mean, there's a lot of ceremonial stuff involved. But also, yes, maybe the food's bad for you. And Jesus says, what you put into your mouth doesn't defile you, ceremonially for sure. Like, in other words, righteously before God. God's not like, we're not okay because you ate that. That's not what he's talking about. In fact, I think he's even saying if it makes you physically ill, defiles you that way, that's not a good thing. Like, he's not saying be reckless, you know, rub it in the dirt for a while and, you know, eat it then. He's not saying that. He's saying that even if it makes you physically ill, that's less important than what I'm going to get to next. The food that you eat, that's not, but your body, that can't defile you. He says, food doesn't go into your heart. Now, that word heart there is not referring to your bum, 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 bum heart. It's referring to that seat of affection, that metaphysical heart, that part that makes our decisions and our beliefs and our values and our drives us to live and do what we do, that heart. He says, food doesn't go into the heart, but it only passes through the stomach and then goes into the sewer, right? Your body has a filtration system supposed to take care of most of that for you. And then it goes into the sewer. We'll just skip all the in-between steps right there, okay? We don't need to discuss that anymore. But Jesus says, listen, and here's the cool part. By saying this, it says, by saying this, he declared that every kind of food is acceptable in God's eyes. Again, this is going to fly in the face of some of their beliefs from the law of Moses and from their scriptures. And this is why I often say to our church, I know this is a rabbit trail, and I make it sometimes maybe too often for some people's taste, but I just want to say it's why I get frustrated with modern religion sometimes and Christianity that wants to merge everything in the lump sum called the Bible without ever nuancing what God is saying at different spaces and times. He has different covenants at different times with different people and purposes. And if you just say it's all the Bible, then you can pull a lot of things from one spot that have no relation to what it means to be a follower of Jesus and make a very hard case that's easy to cut off at the knees about our faith. Because Jesus just basically said, the scriptures say this over here. I'm just telling you, it's all acceptable. But, listen, there's a reason and a time and a place and a covenant going on here. I'm telling you, I don't care. And you know how hard it was for the disciples to believe that? Jesus would later die, would rise again, would return to heaven, and several years later, Peter would be on a rooftop by himself and have another come to Jesus moment where God finally convinces him not to call any kind of food unclean because God says it's clean. Years later, Peter's still wrestling with this, and Peter, by the way, is the one we believe who helped author the Gospel of Mark. It was Peter's story. And he's probably recalling that it took him a while to figure out what Jesus was saying when he's saying, who cares? I'm not so concerned about what you're putting into your mouth. Verse 20, then Jesus added, it's what comes from inside that defiles you. Jesus says, let's focus on what God's concerned about. And then he explains in verse 21, for from within or out of a person's heart, there's that word heart again, not the physical heart, but the metaphysical, the who we are. For from within, out of a person's heart comes evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, wickedness, deceit, lustful desires, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. That's quite a list. We could spend an entire Sunday going through every one of those words in depth, couldn't we? But I think that's not our process today. Maybe we'll do that another time. But I think most of you can look at those words and know what they mean. They're pretty spot on. I will make one observation. It's interesting how many of the Ten Commandments are referenced in there. Those ones about how we treat and other people and what we do. Killing, stealing, cheating, slandering, lying, not honoring. And so many of the laws deal with those things. And Jesus is saying a whole lot more. And a lot of it deals with our behaviors in this world. He says, that's the stuff I'm worried about. You're worried about your germs. I'm worried about this. Verse 23, Jesus says, all these vile things come from within, and they are what defile you. Right? Now, here's the deal. If you're like a Bible student and you are tracking with me today, you might think that what Jesus has said today sounds vaguely familiar, and that's because it is. Jesus has several times in his ministry said that already. He preached it in the Sermon on the Mount, if you remember the Sermon on the Mount. He did it in another confrontation at a different place with a different group of religious people. He does it again in Luke. That's like the fourth time that Jesus says the same thing, but in different wording, different packaging, same truth. In fact, I'll show you one of them, Luke 6:45. He concludes that talk by saying, what you say flows from what is in your heart. And so you're concerned about what you're putting in you. I'm concerned about what's coming out of you because it's coming out of your heart. And that's the point. If we really want to get to the heart of the problem, here's the deal. The heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. We get concerned about all the other stuff, but the heart of the problem with us, with me, is the problem of the heart. The heart of the problem with you, can we be honest, is the problem of the heart. The problem with culture today is the problem of the heart. That's one reason why we want to try to legislate morality and legislate things away and you know, ban certain things and ban certain talk and all sorts of stuff. We want to fix all these problems that are all surface symptom problems, but will never be fixed until we get to the heart. Because the heart of the problem is the problem of the heart. And so, that's our story today. But hold on. Hold on. When I prepare a sermon, I've said this before, when we prepare sermons, we oftentimes will say, we have two questions we ask ourselves when we're stuck. Sometimes the sermons flow so easily, sometimes we get stuck. And the two questions we come back to is this: what do I want them to know? And what do I want them to do? And Anthony and I really wrestle these questions down. We work on every sermon together. What do I want them to know? What do I want them to do? Well, in the study of the life of Jesus, what do I want you to know? I want you to know what happened in the life of Jesus. I want you to know what Jesus is teaching. I hope we've pointed out in a decent way today. I hope I helped you see what it was teaching, and now you know. That's what I want you to know. But then the next question we ask is, what do we want them to do? That's the action step. We try to include that almost every lesson, every sermon. And somebody might be like, Arlen, give us the action step so I can take the action of going home and getting some Culver's, you know? What's the action step? I'm not going to write an action step for you today. I have no action step of my own device or Anthony's devising. Instead, we're going to borrow a phrase from an ancient king of Israel named Solomon. Solomon was known as a very wise king. He lived 1,000 years before Jesus walked the earth. And Jesus is saying all these things 1,000 years later, but Solomon, this wise man, wrote down his wise sayings, or we call them the Proverbs, and he put them in a collection for his children primarily, but also for anyone else who would gain wisdom from them. And in those wise sayings, 1,000 years before Jesus, Solomon makes this statement. It's our take-home statement today. Proverbs 4:23. He says, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. That's a big statement. Guard your heart above all else. I mean, listen, it's not that you don't want to guard anything else. It's not that we want to be careless with our health. Take care of your health, take care of your body. It's not that we want to be careless with our finances. Be careful and protect that. nobody cares with our relationships or anything else in the world. Everything deserves our attention, but sometimes all these other things seem so important that what gets buried to the bottom of the list is guarding our heart. And then things creep in until they creep out, because what goes in the heart will make its way out. And later we're like, what happened? I was being so careful, but we got sabotaged from the inside out. And Jesus was teaching what Solomon said before. You want to take care of the heart of the problem, it's the problem of the heart. Guard your heart above all else. Yes, take care of those other areas, but stop being careless with what you let affect your heart. How's your heart today, church? How's your heart today, listener? Guard your heart above all else. Why? For it determines the course of your life. Here's what I've learned, and I've been alive long enough to see this over and over and over again as a student who studies the human side of our experience. People can sometimes go far for a while based upon their talent, their skill, their luck sometimes, their work ethic and their moxie, right? They can go someplace. Sometimes things just work out, some luck and some pluck and some get after it and some skill that God gives us. And people can build great things and become rich or famous or whatever else and rise. But if they aren't careful, the problem is in time, our character catches up to us. We always end up rising or falling to the level of our character. And if someone rises the fast way, another way without guarding their heart, when the character catches up, it's a very public fall. We could tell those stories all day long, can't we? A very public crash and burn. Because eventually, our life is determined and its course is determined by what's in our heart. So what's in your heart today? Don't make it less important than all the other things that matter. How's your heart? Let me ask you a question individually. Is your heart full of lust and perverse thinking, lustful thoughts and desires? Is your heart full of anger, hate, bitterness, and unforgiveness? Has your heart been invaded by greed, selfish ambitions and desires? Fill in the blanks. Most of us, if we talk about it, we know where we've been vulnerable. We know what's been creeping into us that's unhealthy. We just kind of say, I can control it, I can keep it hidden, but it does come out. It will determine the course of your life. It will make you look back one day and say, nothing else, the things that mattered most to me were affected by my heart. And this challenged me this week. I didn't pass the first run through before I had to have a prayer time afterwards. Because we got to guard our heart. How's your heart today? God cares about you. We're going to have 2 minutes of quiet time in a few minutes here. I want to ask you to just talk to God. And if you know something's there, say, God, it's time. I need to do some house cleaning in my heart. Maybe it's time to say, Lord, I need to be more careful what I let in. Those thoughts come, those lustful thoughts come, I need to just say, no place for that. The kind of talk comes, I push it away. Those kind of greedy things get in, I gotta purge it out. Those angers and bitternesses want to seep in, I gotta say, no place for that. Because if my heart gets under attack and I don't guard it, my life will be affected. Jesus says, that's what I'm worried about. Guard that above all else.